Good morning. So last time we looked at taking the components we had for building processors, which we had sort of these wires that move values from one component to another and kind of stored a value. We had these registers that really stored a value where the value would be kept there until some signal, which we learned we had this periodic clock signal. And we had muxes and other sorts of things that do logic for making decisions and doing calculations. And we started out by taking these and talking about how we could build some processors that do a few instructions. So we started with not and jump. So talking about, okay, we have to control where the program counter goes, which is also sort of what you extended in a different way in the lab yesterday. And sort of the idea was that we could just have a mux to control the next PC value. We also then talked about the register file. So we said, okay, well, you know, we have instructions that move the program counter around, but that's not very interesting if we aren't actually like computing values. So we added this register file component, which we could have built ourselves from registers, which you already knew about, but we have this provided for you, both because it's sort of convenient to be able to have some way of like taking the idea of a register and accessing it, and because for grading purposes, we'd like to be able to easily see what's in each register in our simulator. And our register file had this design where we had these read ports and these write ports. So these read ports, we had an input where we set a register index, and in the same cycle, we got the value in that register. We had this write ports where we set a register index and a new register value, and that value would be stored before the next cycle at the rising edge of the clock. And something we needed here is that, well, we didn't always want to write a new value to a register. And well, I guess maybe we could have dealt with this by having, you know, us do something where we're like, we write back the same value we just read from a register all the time. But instead, our register file design for our convenience provides this register none register ID, which just means don't actually do anything. It's not a real register. And in addition to using a register file, we also needed to actually access memory. And, well, we were already doing that. We were reading instructions, but that wasn't going to be enough. And there are two reasons for that. So one is that the design that we're going for our processor right now is one where we execute one instruction every cycle. And we have this instruction memory where we can read values from memory, but we can only read one value per cycle. We put in a value, and we get out what's at that location. We put in an address, I should say. And, well, you know, maybe that address could change over the cycle, but at the end of the cycle, when we're updating our registers, it's only going to have one value, so we're only going to be reading one address every cycle, usefully at least. So our solution to this is to have a second memory called the data memory, and this is going to support both reading and writing, and the interface that our textbook authors chose for this is that we'd have a read or write enable signal to decide which of those we're doing. And reads and writes work the same kind of way as our register file. Reads happen in the same cycle. We put in an address, we get out the value at that address. In this case, it's a 64-bit value because that's what our, say, MRMoveQ does. And our writes happen at the end of the cycle like register. So we put in a value and an address, and at the end of the cycle, that address is updated. Where by end of cycle, I mean the rising edge of the clock. And from these components, we looked at how we could build some other subsets of our instructions. So we had our add processor. We had something which did add and not. Well, we didn't actually go in super detail, but we had a question about that. And we did a move to register CPU when I finished up last time. So questions on the things we covered last time? last time we were working on this move to register CPU. And so this is the design we ended up with. We had our PC increment, similar to what you did in lab. We had this need for a MUX for Dest E that we need because sometimes we are writing to RB, and sometimes we are writing to RA. Might have thought, well, maybe we could solve this by using the second write port. But if we do that, it doesn't really actually help us because we'd still need to decide whether or not to write, and we'd need a MUX in front of that, too. And I mentioned briefly our textbook authors. For the memory instructions, they use DestM and not DestE, but both work. And you still need MUXs in either case because you need to decide either, in this case, which of the RA or RB we're writing to DestE. If you use DestM instead for MR move Q, you need to decide, am I writing something with DestM or not? Am I writing something with DestE or not? We need MUXs to do that. And we mentioned that our immediate value here is exactly the V and D for IR move Q and MR move Q, which in IR move Q case, we write it. In the MR move Q case, it's what we use to do an addition to compute the address to read from. Yes? Question is, would I ever be writing to RA instead of RB using IR move Q and IR move Q? No, because that's not what the instructions do. But, you know, this MUX is here for the other instructions. And it suggests that, you know, maybe there's more instructions we could have implemented without changing anything besides this logic here that decides what selector signal to send to the MUXs. Okay, other questions? So let's extend this by adding the other move instruction. So get all the move instructions, which is our move queue, the move to memory. So where am I going to need MUXs to do this? Someone tell me when in place something I'm going to need to do to extend this processor to add the RM move queue. So what does RM move Q do? So that's the way I like thinking about it, is what does RM move Q do? So I just look at, well, I just think about it. It's going to take RA here. So the value of register RA, and we're reading that here. So this is the value of RA here. Sorry, here. And we want to write it to memory. So that means that we're going to need to have some connection from here to here. So that doesn't look like we need any MUXs for that. But we know that the data memory doesn't always write. So we actually are going to need something. So we have the write enable signal we're going to need to set somehow to make that happen. And we also should check, okay, are we writing to the correct address? And it turns out, yes, we can do that because we got RB and the D. So that happens to work out the same. And this is why our textbook authors chose to have MR move Q write to RA, is to keep this address computation circuit the same for both instructions. Now, there's one thing that is missing here that we need. For our RM move Q instruction. And you miss it because you're like, oh, well, we're doing, with the lines I draw, we're doing everything we need to do. But we're doing something we shouldn't do. Yeah?
No, we're only writing
Yeah, so we have this mux here that controls what register we write to, and we're writing to a register. We're either writing to RA or RB. Those are our options. And we don't want either of those. So we're going to need to somehow change this. So the simplest thing is we can make that mux a bigger mux. So that's change we'll need, that and our send the value to the memory and have something that controls write enable, probably based on the opcode, some sort of mux that says if the opcode is rmove q, write enable is 1, otherwise it's 0. Yes? Sorry? Is question is source A and source B are both RA and RB? Yes. So in this case, that's what they would have to be because that's the only thing that makes sense for all these instructions. Yeah?
Would you add that extra statement to the mux encode?
So would I add which extra statement to the mux encode? The one for dest E?
Yeah.
So for dest E, we're going to have the cases we had before. So we'll have there's different ways of writing this. So one way is we could write some case which is, you know, going to be A, or we should really redefine that elsewhere, and we'll have a case which is like if I code is rm move q, we'll just have the constant regnon, which is 15. I didn't write that out fully because it's accidentally ran out of space. So dest E, this doesn't specify what goes into memory, it specifies what goes into the registers.
Okay.
So if hypothetically we had an instruction, well not even hypothetically, if we have an instruction that needs to write to a register and to memory, we can do that. And we in fact have such an instruction, it's called push. Yes? Why does it say OXF? That's the same thing as regnon, 15.
Oh, okay.
Yes?
That's like, what is the plus sign mean?
What is the plus sign next to the data memory, you mean?
Yeah.
That is doing the addition, because we have to add D and RB, the value in register RB. Yes? The question is, when we implement mrmoveq and htrs, are we always writing to RA? We're always writing to RA as in that part, the register specified by that part of the instruction, yes? That is what the encoding is.
So if you asked us to implement mrmoveq, we would always set dest E to RA for...
This, remember, this is going to be bits 12 through 16 of I10 bytes. So some value which comes from bits 12 through 16 of I10 bytes. So I call it RA in the code I've shown you, but your code could call it something else or could call it RB to be confusing. I don't recommend that. But something from those bits of the instruction. Yes? Question is the register A goes to data in and register B plus D goes to address in? Yes, except being careful, I mean the value of register A and the value of register B in both cases. Because these are the outputs of the register file. To be distinguished, they're not like the index of the register, they're the actual value from the register. Yeah. So the question is, RA is the value, just the value, and RB is some sort of pointer. That is the assumption I would have. But like, we don't actually care what the meaning of RB is. We just know that when we add it to D, we get an address. Yeah?
The register, you need source and destination encoded for the register, but for the memory, you just need one.
So the question is, for register, we have a separate source and destination port, and for the memory, you have one address port? Yes. So this is a design choice that our textbook authors made when designing this data memory in this register file. So we could have designed a data memory where we had like a separate address port for reading and writing, but probably we'd only do that if we wanted to support a data memory that let us read and write at the same time. Yeah.
Could you explain one more time how you would represent the computing the displacement with the address of the or with the value of the register in code?
So how would I represent this addition operation of D plus RB in HCLRS? So this would be I would have extracted, the immediate using i10 bytes, and you'll have to figure out which bits, and I would have reg output B, and so this would be reg output B plus immediate, and that would be assigned to mem adder, because that was the name, because reg output B and mem adder are just names that are given to the built-in connections for these components that were on some previous slides and are in the HCLRS documentation you can look up. Does that answer your question?
But I had a follow-up question. So when would I be using data in?
So data in is specifying the value to write. So in the case of rmoveq, we want it to be reg output A, the value of register A. So when we don't set the write enable signal, it's not going to matter what that data in is.
So data in
allows you to write variables. Memory, I would say data in specifies what value to write. We have to specify that somewhere. That's the data in signal, which is called mem input in HCLRS. Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
Write enable, do you also have to have a mux there to show whether or not the enable is true?
Question is, would write enable be implemented with a mux? Most likely. We need something where, based on the I code, write enable is one for some instructions and not others. Other questions? Yeah.
So for mmoveq, would data out spit out the computed memory address that should go with RA?
So the question is, for mmoveq, is data out the computed memory address? No, data out is the value at that memory address. If it was just the computed memory address, we wouldn't need the data memory.
And that's what's going into RA.
And yes, and for mmoveq, we hope that the value for memory is what goes into the register file to store in RA. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so we have our move CPU, and something notable here is that we have some signals here which are carrying sort of information that's like part of executing our instruction, and some sort of meta signals that are just about making sure we choose the right path, that we choose, for example, if we're executing our rmoveq instruction, that we choose to not write anything. So we have, to make that choice, we have a signal here that tells that mux what to do. We have a signal going into the data memory that tells the data memory to write sometimes and not to write other times. And a common term you'll see is that these sort of signals that control muxes and our data memory and so on are called the control path of the processor, and the rest is called the data path. The data path is stuff that carries what the instruction is actually working on. And the control path is the stuff that deals with, making sure the data goes to the right place. And in future diagrams of processors, I am often going to omit large parts of the control path, just because this diagram is going to get more crowded. So just not going to draw. And as this slide mentions, this is a fuzzy line. So for example, condition codes, they're kind of in between, right? So if we think of like a conditional jump instruction, we have condition codes which are part of the effect of the instruction for a lot of instructions like adds, and are being used by the conditional jump to do the computation of like, do we actually jump? But that's kind of a control path thing because we're choosing like which value to send to the PC. And there's not wide agreement on which parts of like that operation are part of the control path or not, and we're not going to care about it. We're not going to ask you, is this control path or data path? Even though that is a commonly used term if you like read many textbooks. But the important thing is that like I'm going to often not draw large parts of the control path. Just to keep my diagram simple, usually your assumption should be if you see a MUX, probably there's some decision being made, most likely based on the icon. And if you have our data memory, there's a write enable and read enable signal that we need to probably need to set to make it work properly. I'm just not going to be doing that explicitly. So in red is our control path here. Questions on the control and data path? Yeah. Question is the write enable control path? Yes. Yeah. Question is would ALUs be control path? So, if you remember ALU, we had two values go in and a value computed go out. That would be data path. There's also an input deciding which computation to do. That's control path. Other questions? Okay. So our textbook, if you read it, they have kind of a different approach to implementing instructions. So here I just said, what does this instruction do? Let's add those components. They have a sort of a more systematic approach that might be more valuable when we're going through all the instructions, which is that they divide the processor up into what they call stages. And this term causes a lot of problems. So when you hear the word stages, you think, okay, so that means the way our instruction works is we do one thing, then the next thing, you know, the first stage, and the second stage, and the third stage. And right now, that's not true. So right now, we're working on what we call a single cycle design, where every instruction happens in one cycle, and these stages aren't actually going to decide when things happen. What's going to decide when things happen? What's connected to what? So for example, you know, our memory writing here is going to have to happen after we do this add, because we can't do it. Well, it's going to happen at the end of the cycle, because that's when it happens. And this addition here to compute the address is going to have to happen after we read from the registers, just because we can't actually add things we don't have. We have to get the values first, and so on. So we'll have those sorts of dependencies where, like, where we can't do something yet, but we won't have other types of dependencies like, you know, we can't, like, you know, like our, I guess, our textbook will say that we're, say, computing the next program counter in a certain stage. But when is the next program counter going to be computed? Whenever this MUX gets settled with its, you know, deciding which input to use, and the value of the PC goes through this +2 or +10 circuits, right? And that's not going to be in any particular order relative to when we read the instruction, relative to when we like access registers, right? Because we can do that at the same time. It's not going to happen necessarily before or after, even though our textbook's going to say that's one stage, this is another stage. So the stages at this point are just a conceptual division of the processor, which is helpful for thinking about what do I need to do and making a checklist of this is something I need to think about for this instruction and this and so on and so on. Yes. The question, would the speed of the program be bounded by the slowest stage? So because these stages are not actually the order we do things in at this point, this is not how we measure the speed of our processor at this point. So unless we're actually somehow enforcing that we do one, then the next, it doesn't matter yet. And at this point, most notably, we can like do this add to the PC operation at the same time as like we re-registers. And that's just going to happen naturally because, well, there's something connected to the compute the next PC, something connected to registers, and there's nothing, you know, enforcing that one happens before the other electrically. So they're both going to happen at the same time. Yes?
So, like, a clarification, when you say stages, it's more just an abstraction to help us, like, understand what's going on. And then the actual sequence of execution matters on, like, a mutual dependency between.
Question is, when I say stages, it's more of a conceptual thing to help you think what's going on. The actual dependency is sort of the mutual dependency between parts? Yes. So that's what's true at this point. So the other reason why our textbook uses the word stages is because as our next topic, after we're talking about building our processor in this single cycle design, we'll have a new design called a pipeline processor where we will actually enforce the stages and they will become real stages that we actually do one, then the next, but we aren't there yet. But that's the other reason our textbook uses stages to prepare you for that. But for now, these are just a conceptual division of the processor into stages. So here I've shown the stages our textbook defines for the move processor. And some of these maybe aren't what you were expecting. Which is why I mentioned it. So we have our fetch stage. So fetch is fetch the instruction. But it is also the place where our textbook puts the work of computing what the address of the instruction that follows this instruction is. Then we have decode, which is where we do this like convert opcode logic. That's not what it means. It means reading registers. Yes, it's a bad name. So decode is where we read registers. Executes where we do our ALU type computation. Whatever it is for the instruction. In this case, some of our instructions we have to do in addition. We have memory where we access the data memory, either reading or writing. And we have write back where we write a value to registers. And something you may notice about how these stages work that is already different than an order in the most obvious way is that I say that we write to memory in the memory stage, but we know that happens at the end of the cycle for real, even though it's depicted as a separate thing from writing back to registers, which also happens at the end of the cycle. So our textbook's divided into quote-unquote stages, two parts, the two writes which happen at the same time. Yes? Questions? When would I have an ALU computation that didn't involve addition? Good example would be the XOR instruction. Other questions? Okay. And there's one more stage, which is PC update. So PC update chooses what to put in the program counter register. And here, it's a very boring choice. We're choosing from the address of the following instruction and nothing else. But when we talk about jumps, we'll have another choice, which is the address we got from the immediate. And that's the choice it's making. And when we have return, we'll have a third choice, which is the address we got from memory. So PC updates where that choice is made. So this is the conceptual division that our textbook uses. We have fetch, decode, execute, memory, write back, PC update. And this is the order they put them in, but it's not really the order things happen. So, thinking about order, let's think about the push instruction. So the push instruction, it needs to read the instruction, it needs to change memory because it takes the value of RAX, infer push RAX, and places it in memory at the location pointed to by the stack pointer. It also changes the stack pointer. Or sorry, not the location pointer, but the stack pointer, but the stack pointer plus, minus 8. So it subtracts the location pointer by the stack pointer minus 8, and it changes the stack pointer to the stack pointer minus 8, and it also changes the PC. So the question here is, which order do these things happen in? Question is, do we use ALU for ADQ? So our textbook's design does. In ACLRS, there isn't a real ALU, so. In the slides, yeah, my ADQ used it in ALU. Question back there? They were meant to be posted. That's just a mistake on my part. They'll be posted at least after this lecture, possibly during. Okay, who'd like some more time? One person, I think that's enough. So let's see. So who thinks A? 1, then 2, 3, and 4, and any order. Like, we don't actually know. We don't have enough information to know what order. Okay. How about B? 1 and 2, 3, and 4 happen basically simultaneously. Okay. C? 1, then 2, then 3, then 4. Okay, 1, D, 1, then 3, then 2, then 4. Okay, and how about E, 1, then 2, then 3 and 4 at almost the same time. Okay, a couple people. And F, something else, some order I didn't mention. Person. Okay, so I think the best answer is, in fact, going to be B.
Oh.
And a distinction we should make is that there's a difference between when the values change and necessarily when we might have computed what they'll change to.
Oh.
So, yes, we obviously need to compute what RSP is going to change to before we can, set up the memory access. But the actual changes are going to happen at the same time, and we know that from things we've discussed previously about how the components of our processor works, which is the hint that is written on the slide, how registers, register files, and the memory works. And the thing we need to know is that they actually change the value stored at the rising edge of the clock signal, and there's one clock signal. So this is, these four events are all going to be the rising edge of the clock. And since there's a common clock signal, and we're executing one instruction per cycle, that's all at the same time. And this means that to implement the push instruction, we're going to compute the value we want to store in RSP, and we're going to send that to the data memory. We're not going to directly connect the value from the register file to the data memory, because it's not going to be the right value. Instead, we're going to have to do our subtraction and send that to the data memory in addition to sending it to the back to the register file to write into RSP. Yes?
So why does the instruction be for everything? Does it take, when you do like I do equal something, does that take one clock cycle itself?
The question is, why does the instruction read happen before? So, and does that happen in a different cycle, is your question? So, does it take a clock cycle? So, the way I would say it is that we have our clock cycle, and this here is where the previous update of the PC happened. And only after that happens can we start reading the instruction memory. And that's just going to happen as soon as values can propagate. So somewhere in here, we're going to probably read the instruction memory. And then somewhere after that, we're probably going to, use what we read, use the IM values to compute. And then this rising edge here, I should use a different color. This rising edge here, this is where we actually do the updates of store values. So that's going to be our instruction execution. So right now, we're executing every instruction in one cycle. So the instruction memory read happens sometime after the previous rising edge. Once we have the value, the address value from in the PC register being output to the instruction memory to tell us where to read. And sometime before the next rising edge, we better compute all the values we want to update in registers and memory. Because that's when the update's going to happen. If we're not ready, our processor's broken. Does that answer your question? So why, the question is, why is one before it? So I think there are two ways of looking at this. One is that when we discussed how the instruction memory worked, it didn't care about the clock cycle.
Okay.
So another way you could have figured out that one must happen earlier is that we absolutely cannot figure out how to change memory or RSP or the PC until we've read the instruction. Okay, other questions? Yeah.
So I guess the update doesn't necessarily have to work. It all happens at the end of the clock cycle, but the actual computation of the value you need for an update do happen. They do have an interdependency, right?
So the question is, there's some ordering to the actual computations of the values. Yes. So there's going to be some order in which the computation of what's the new value to put in memory, where to put the new value in memory, what's the new value for RSP, what's the new value for the program counter, there's going to be some ordering for those. But there's nothing which actually enforces that they're in any particular order. Probably we compute what the next program counter should be before we, compute the next value of RSP, just because one involves reading the register file and one doesn't. But that's not like there's nothing which actually requires us to have our processor work that way. So hypothetically, we could have a super slow compute next PC circuit, and that would be fine. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So what prevents a race condition where the memory reads or has the right value to read from?
The question: what prevents a race condition where the memory writes? You mean? To an address before it has the right address to write from. So to prevent that from happening, someone in making the processor is responsible for making this clock cycle long enough. And that's a topic for electrical engineering people, but that's something we're going to be concerned about a little more when we talk about performance, right? Because if we have to make that cycle really long, our processor's not going to be very fast. Answer your question?
Yeah, so it's basically at the hardware level that that's enforced.
His question is, at the hardware level that's enforced? Yeah, so it's enforced just by making the clock cycle as long as it needs to be. So someone needs to figure out how long does the clock cycle need to be, and when we talk about pipelining, we'll be concerned about that because we're going to think about how can we optimize the performance of our processor. We'll give a high-level overview of how we would set that time. Other questions? So the question is, we're assuming at the rising edge that RSP has stopped transitioning. I would say the input to the register file has stopped transitioning. Yes. Other questions? Okay, so that's about instruction timing. So we had these conceptual stages. Aren't our real stages, aren't the real order things happen in, I should say. They'll become real stages later on when we have a different processor design. And we'll see why we want them to become real stages. But for now, things just happen when the values are ready, except for that rising edge of the clock, which triggers certain operations, namely all our writes. But the reason why dividing our textbook into these sort of components, a processor into these components like our textbook does, is useful, is because it allows us to hopefully systematically think about how to implement instructions. So for example, the fetch stage, it does reading the instruction memory and it outputs these values. Our textbook just says, okay, we're gonna say it makes these values, and what we can do is we can think about what should these be for each of our instructions. And our textbook uses the names I'm showing you here. I'm just being consistent with the textbook. I don't think VelC or VelP are good names, but that's the names our textbook uses. So the fetch stage is responsible for reading the instruction, splitting it out into the pieces we're going to use later, namely our register numbers and our immediate, if it has any, and also extracting the opcode for our control logic, and computing the next instruction address that our textbook calls VelP. That's our address, PC plus the length of the instruction, which might not be the next instruction we execute, like if we have a jump. Question is, what is IFUN? IFUN is the name our textbook gives to the secondary opcode. So remember, an add instruction, we had like the opq part, and then we had a part for add, subtract, and so on. IFUN is the add, subtract, and so on. Also the condition code information for conditional jumps and moves. Yes? Question is, IFUN bits 0 through 4 of I10 bytes? Yes. Question is, what would IFUN be if it were FN? It's the same bits, 0 through 4.
But some way to reference that, similarly to all or not or something?
Oh, so question is, are there constants for the values of IFUN, the function, what is probably short for function code? And yes, there are. You can look them up in the HCLRS documentation. So this is conceptually building our processor out from the instruction fetch stage. And I haven't shown being split. Then we have our decode, which is reading registers. So we think of, okay, we read two registers. Our textbook calls the values we read val A and val B. So our two outputs of our register file. That's our decode. I have in quotes because I think it's not the name we should use for this stage, but unfortunately, our textbook is not alone in calling register read decode. There's a lot of things that do that. So if we're thinking about building out our processor here, you might say, okay, so we're going to take our val C from, and we're going to also read from RA and RB, right? We extracted RA and RB from the instruction. That's what we read from. That doesn't always actually work. So for which of these instructions is that wrong? Is this wrong? So just want to go through these instructions and say, where did we make a mistake by reading from RA and RB? And this sort of idea that we can like look at a stage and what it does, in this case reading registers, and say, are we doing the right thing for each instruction? This is sort of the value of our textbook's idea of dividing the processor up this way, so that we can just take each piece alone rather than thinking about what the whole instruction does. Say, what does this instruction need to do for reading registers? Nothing else, just reading registers. And do the same thing for like accessing memory and so on later on. Give you a minute to think about which of these instructions will we have a problem here. Okay, who needs more time? Okay, so who thinks we'd have a problem for not? Okay, a couple people. Add. MR move queue. Don't worry that. OR move queue. Jump. A lot of people. Push. Okay. So let's start with nop. So nop, I assume the logic is, wait a moment, nop instructions don't read registers. Why are we reading registers? So there's not actually a problem because it's true. Nop instructions don't need to read registers, but there's nothing wrong with reading registers when we don't care about what they are. So it's not a problem. I understand wanting to not do it, and I won't like penalize you if your HTLRS code does that, like passes reg not in that case, but it's not needed because if we read a register we don't care about, it's not going to do anything. So not a problem. Add queue is fine. And remove queue. So I assume the issue here is that we're reading a register we don't care about, but again, like this is not actually a problem. It's just, you know, we'll get a value we're not going to use. And the same for our move queue, we do need to read both registers, and that's fine. We're getting the two register values we need. Maybe we'd want them in a different order, but this should be acceptable. We have a register value we need is the one to eventually pass to data in, and one we need to do in addition. For jump, we don't need to read any registers, but you know, our register reading is fine. You might say, wait a moment, but for jump, we need to get val c, so yes. So we are going to need, so I guess you might have been complaining that I somehow dropped val c from this diagram, which I didn't mean to do. So we'll have, I guess, our val c. Or you might have been complaining, wait a moment, we have val p here, which isn't the thing place we went to jump to. That's not a problem because we haven't connected that to the PC yet. If we connected that to the PC, yes, it would be a problem. But we haven't done that, so we're okay. Because we can fix that later. We haven't made a mistake yet. Push. Push is actually going to be a problem, though. So why is push a problem? So if we think of our push instruction, like push RAX, is RA going to be RAX or RB? If we look at our instruction encoding, RA is going to be RAX. So what's RB going to be? If we look at our instruction encoding, it's going to be regnum, OXF. And the push instruction needs to read from the stack pointer. These two ports are the only way we can possibly do that. So one of them better be the register index for RSP, or else the push instruction can't get the stack pointer value. So push can't do this, yes.
Would the same logic be applied to pop?
Would the same apply to pop? Yes, the same logic applies to pop, call, and return. They all don't have the index of the stack pointer register in their instruction, but they all need to actually get that value. So we're going to need some sort of mux to decide, you know, to read the stack pointer sometimes, even though it doesn't appear in the instruction. And a way you might figure this out is you can just list all the instructions and say, what should source A be? What should source B be? You know, and we're making some decisions here, like I'm deciding arbitrarily that I'm going to use source B to read from RSP for call and return and not source A, which I'm allowed to do. And I guess I'm also reading from RA for pop when I don't really need to do that, but that's a mistake. And as I mentioned, we don't really need the none here because we can just read from something and not care about using the none. Yes?
The problem is that you didn't have the stack pointer like as one of the registers that you were reading.
Question, the problem is I didn't have the stack pointer as one of the registers I was reading? Yes, because that's the only way we can get the stack pointer. Because it has to come out of the register file. And the only things that can come out of the register file are these two things. Is that okay? Other questions? Follow-ups? Yeah.
How can you have RSP point to both the instruction stack and the register push stack?
Question, how can I have RSP point to both the instruction stack and the register push stack? There is one. In our x86, there's a stack. which is pointed to by RSP, I wouldn't say there's a separate instruction stack versus other things. We put our return addresses on the stack, we put temporary variables on that same stack. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yes. Question is the issue that push, pop, and so on don't refer to the RSP explicitly, and that's unlike our other instructions? Yes. So that's why we need this special case. Other questions? Yeah.
Does it mean you pop, push, and then all function, and inside that function, pop the same thing you pushed before?
The question, does this mean I can't push and then call a function, and then in that function, pop the same thing I pushed before? So, indeed not, because the call instruction pushes something, and if you just pop, you'll get that. But you could adjust the stack pointer to point to the thing that was previously pushed, or you could access the stack directly with mrmoveq instead and access the thing that was previously pushed. Yes? The question is, after I get the stack pointer out of the register file, would I use the ALU to increment or decrement it? That is what our textbook design does. Other questions? Okay, so here's our sort of minimal but fixed version of our up to instruction decode. I'm missing the wire for VLC, I promise it's going to be there. So then we have our execute stage. So this is where we perform an ALU operation. Our textbook calls the output of the ALU val e. You could use a different name. This is also where our textbook decides to put the work of dealing with the condition codes. Why do they put them in this execute step? Because they are based on what the ALU did. So this is where we both read and write, conceptually read and write the condition codes. So the condition codes are going to be registers, so the actual writing, well, it won't really happen until the end of the cycle. But we'll compute the values we're writing, next to the ALU, presumably. And you might say, okay, so what does using the condition codes look like? So for that, we're presumably going to use our secondary opcode or function code that tells us what condition, less than, and so on. And we could just have a mux which has inputs for sort of the combination. So for less than or equal, we say SF or ZF. If that's true, that says whether the condition's true. And we can use that, for example, to control whether or not we write for a conditional move by deciding whether to send RB or the regnon for a conditional move. This is the sort of logic we'd have for that, which you'll implement some version of in next week's lab. So we have our execute. So here's our simple version is we have an ALU. We compute what operation to do elsewhere. That's control logic. And we have our two ALU inputs, which our textbook calls ALUA and ALUB. So same question. For which of these instructions did we make a mistake here? Or are we missing some functionality we need? Are we, is doing this ALU operation not going to be what we want? Okay, who would like some more time? A couple people. Okay, so who thinks we have a, let's go. So who thinks there would be a problem with NOP? Okay, add, M or move Q. Okay, pop, you call, Q. Okay, so I believe M or move Q, yeah, we'd have a problem. And the problem is that we need to add val c to something, and if the ALU is what we're doing for our primary computation, you know, it's going to be, should be done by the ALU, so val c needs to end up here somehow. How pop and call, for those instructions, we need to add or subtract from the stack pointer. And if we're going to have our primary arithmetic operation be done by the ALU should do that addition or subtraction. So that means we need sort of to add or subtract 8, and we don't have a way of getting our 8 into the ALU, so we need to add that. Or we need to do something like add a new operation to the ALU, which is not add, but add 8. Maybe we could do, but probably doesn't really make sense if it already doesn't add. Yes?
Is the reason why call wouldn't have a problem for the same reason, because it doesn't
have to? The question is, would call not is the reason why call wouldn't have a problem? I would say call and pop both have a problem too, because we need the 8. Other questions? So that's our we need our displacement, and we need our 8. So we can add those in like so. Questions? Yeah. So if you get that 8, would we just have a wire hardwired to 8? Yes. That would be an acceptable solution. Other questions? Yeah. What is that gap? That is because I'm going to need to draw RA going somewhere else later. So that's our execute step. Then we have memory. This is where we read or write data memory, and we have one signal of note, which is valm, which is the value read from memory if we read from memory. Otherwise, it's not going to be useful. So the most straightforward thing is that we'll have our a value connected to our memory and to memory's data in, which is register A, and a value connected to its address in, which is the ALU output. Right, that's right here. And question here is, where do we have a problem? Can we just connect the ALU output to the memory address in and the RA value to the memory data in? Remember, this is what we did for R move Q and M move Q, so it seemed okay. Do we have a problem with that?
Yeah,
Okay, who'd like some more time? Okay. So, not many, but a few people. Okay, who would like some more time? Okay, not one person. I don't think that's enough. So let's see, who thinks we have a problem for an op? Okay. Or move Q? One person. M or move Q? One person. Pop. A few people. And call. Okay, so we have not, most people think everything's fine. There are some problems with pop and call. So let's talk about one. So one thing that is not an issue here is we can in fact get RSP. So we need a stack pointer to determine where to write to or for pop, for call, and where to read from for pop. Fortunately, we can now get that. We fixed that earlier. So here we have the stack pointer. And for call, we need to subtract 8 from it. We can do that because we have 8 here. And yes, it does a subtract from operation because that's what subtracts needs to do. So hopefully it does a subtract from operation and not a subtract to operation. So that seems fine, but we have some problems. So for call, can someone describe to me what does the call instruction do? What are the steps of the call instruction if you're like, we're simulating it by hand? Yeah.
Don't you decrement sub RSP by 8 and then you push the address of the next instruction onto the stack?
Yeah, so we push the address of the next instruction onto the stack. And the address of the next instruction is never this value. So we need to do something about that. The address of the next instruction is this value over here. So we need to have some connection to here with amongs for call. For pop. Can someone tell me, if you're simulating by hand, what does the pop instruction do? So the pop instruction, it adds 8 to RSP, and what else does it do? Yeah.
Puts the value at the top of the stack into the specified register.
Okay, puts the value at the top of the stack, and how do we know where the top of the stack is? So RSP plus 8 is the new top of the stack, but it reads the value from the old top of the stack. This is a very subtle thing, but it means that val e here for pop here, this is the new top of stack, not the old one. We want the old one as the location we read from in memory. So we need some way of shortcutting the old value into the addressing. Yeah. Question is, could I just decrement again for my mux input rather than bypassing the ALU? Yes, but then you effectively need two ALUs or something like it. Other questions? Yeah.
Why did have to mux a zero in the input of ALU B?
Question is, why did I add a draw mux with a zero for ALU B? So as we'll discuss next time, this is how our textbook decided to implement IRMoveQ. You don't have to do that. So to get our fixed version, here's with the memory stage, and we'll talk about write back next time. Beyond saying, here's our first version.